If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. Sally Belcher, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're the founder and director and senior podiatrist of Rose Bay Podiatry.
I am. I'm not actually the founder, but I am now the director and owner.
But you own the joint.
I own the joint.
Okay. So and I can see on your shirt there that that's what your deal is. I actually want to talk to you about podiatry. So like it's an interesting topic for us to talk about. For me, like not so much podiatry, but health professionals, running businesses as a health professional is a lot of health professionals don't know how to run businesses.
Absolutely.
That's my experience with them. Like doctors are the worst business people in the world, unfortunately. Lawyers, maybe professionals across the board. Lawyers are hopeless at running a business. They might be very good as a lawyer, going through the legislation and telling you how to interpret something and drafting a document and giving it to you and charging a big fee for it. Doctors are the same. Doctors used to anyway, used to make a lot of dough, but hopeless at investing it. Didn't know how to control costs. And podiatrists, you fit in the same category. You're a professional, medical professional, and there's a whole list of medical professionals, but you're a medical professional, but you're running a business. And the question that I want to talk to you about is how does a health professional run a business? But before we go on to that path, I just need to know a little bit about you. So why the hell did you decide to become a podiatrist? Tell me about that.
Normally the question I get asked multiple times a day is why feet, because people kind of
why feet?
It's quite a stereotype around, why would you be a podiatrist? It wasn't so much feet that attracted me to the profession. It was more, I suppose, the health science behind it, the anatomy, the physiology, the function of the body, which straight out of high school I went into podiatry. I can remember Mum, when I came home, my number one priority for university course was podiatry, and she was a bit shocked, kind of going, you want to work with feet for the rest of your life? But it was, I think it takes a special kind of person or a certain type of person to become a health professional that wants to help people and has an interest in the body and its function. And that overarchingly is what drew me towards podiatry. At the time when I finished high school, there was a big need for podiatrists in the community, so job outcomes were quite good. Once you've finished the podiatry degree, you can go straight into private practice, owning your own business, which was appealing to me as well. So I thought, look, I'll give it a go. And I love the course. It's a four-year degree. It's a very small profession, so everyone kind of knows each other within the profession. I think there's only about 6,000 of us in Australia. That's how I got into podiatry. Once I'd finished the course, I did some subcontracting work for another business for 6 months. So I got a bit of skills, following a more experienced podiatrist's footsteps. But after 6 months, the need for me to go out on my own and have a bit of independence and creativity of my own, I started up my own practice down in Melbourne.
So if you made an interesting point. I must say I have been to super podiatrists in the past, not for structural reasons because I haven't had any structural need, but for other reasons. So usually cosmetic reasons. Some people use podiatrists for that reason, but and I haven't seen one for a long time. But one of the things I want to talk to you about is the functional importance of our feet, how we stand, our gait, how we walk, and then how that then translates into what shoes we wear, And then as someone like me who is getting older, who has lots of friends with knee problems and very hip problems and every other bloody thing, which I don't have, how important is it to get those things right? And is that where a healthcare professional, when it comes to podiatry, is that where you fit in? Mm. Is that how you see yourself as?
Yeah, look, podiatry, it's an interesting health science in that we cover such a scope of the body. So we learn dermatology. So we're doing skin and nail care.
Yeah.
There's a biomechanics. So we're looking functionally at how the foot's functioning on the body compared with the legs and hips and the alignment and all of that. Obviously, sporting injury, someone sprains their ankle, does something like that, that will be the point of call because we're structural knowledge. And then also minor surgeries, ingrown toenails, things like that. So it's rather than, you know, without comparing to other professions, a physiotherapy would only manage musculoskeletal issues, whereas we see the foot and ankle as a whole. So we deal with everything. So as you said, maybe yours was cosmetic, which I assume was dermatology, skin and nail treatment.
Yep.
So in one day we can get a huge different variance of clients coming in, coming back to the structural stuff. So, yeah, a lot of there's different schools of thought on it. I like to, if I see something that's really out of the ordinary, so people bring their kids in and say, little Johnny got a flat foot.
I'll what does assess, that mean? Could you tell me what that means? I want to know what that means,
okay, flat feet. Flat feet. So generally under three, babies have a big fat pad in their arch. So majority of kids under three have a lot flat of fat. Foot. It's a big fat pad under the arch of their foot. So they're not meant to have an arch in their foot under three. Right. It's a fat pad. It's meant to be there. Sometimes there's a family history or someone that they know that's had a flat foot, so they're concerned that their child's following that path and they want to get it checked out. So I will assess, but a lot of my treatment protocol is based on pain. So if someone comes in and they've got a foot in a position that is not the ideal arched foot perfect alignment, if there's no pain or compensation elsewhere in the hip, back, knees, they're not having any pain or issues, I don't correct it because their body's usually functioning quite well on its own.
But can you look at someone walking?
Yeah, that's what we do. We do that as part of the
would you
assessment.
But you're sitting there having a cup of coffee in Darlinghurst from Rose Bay and someone walks past you.
Oh, unconsciously. I think once you're trained, it's, you've always kind of got eyes and you see someone wearing UGG boots that really shouldn't be wearing UGG boots and they're kind of busting through the sides. You're like, oh, God, do I hand them a business card?
Let them go. Because we're on our feet all the time.
Yeah.
We're on our feet and our ass all the time. And unfortunately, we're on our ass more than we're on our feet, more so these days. But we're on our feet all the time. It carries a lot of load, mm-hmm. Depending on how heavy you are, but nonetheless, it carries a lot of load relative to the size of the foot. So the design mm-hmm. of the foot's like pretty fantastic.
It's pretty good.
It's ridiculously good relative, obviously, to the rest of the leg and the hip and everything else because everything's connected like the old song. Do you marvel at what our feet put up with?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you even look at athletes and it's amazing how not just the foot but the body in general, it's the way it functions is pretty amazing. And also the compensations that your body will go through. There's some, a joint that's slightly locked up, the way that will compensate to continue to function in the most energy efficient way is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, my feet are embarrassingly ugly. In that, my skin and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's something I get
come in.
Yeah, oh, better. So, and it is something I've sort of become more conscious of as I got older. When I was young, I couldn't give a damn. But I think people become more conscious of the feet.
Mm.
I mean, you were conscious of your hand and make sure you're properly groomed because I grew up in an environment and I grew up in an era where how you present your hands is really important.
Mm.
My mother was always on to me about what sort of shoes I was wearing and in terms of quality shoes I was wearing. I didn't really understand what that was about. But now, today, people are really conscious of their feet, like feet in a cosmetic sense. But I think it's moved beyond cosmetics now. For me, I'm really conscious of how well I stand now and exercise. Should I do yoga stance? Should I put one foot up on my knee and practice standing straight on my foot and make sure my balance is pretty good?
Yeah.
And do I do it for a minute or should I do it for 5 minutes and then I swap over to the other foot? I try to do that every single morning.
Good.
And so thank you very much. I feel actually really good now you said good.
But balance is very important.
Yeah, but because I was going to get to that. So how important, is it for someone in your game to educate younger people and their parents And from what age do you start to think, should we start to think about these things relative to equipping our children or our whoever it is we're keen to look after, equipping them for the day they turn 70? And what should we be doing? Is it? It's not just simply like go for a run these days or mark you know, do 10,000 steps. What is
look,
it?
Look, I think it's a little bit out of the scope of what I practice with at the moment.
No, but I just as a conversation, podiatry look, generally.
I would be encouraging people to wear a variety of shoes, not just sticking in one shoe all the time, and a variety of activities. If you're a runner, make sure you're also doing strengthening work, as you mentioned, balance, just those simple activities of standing on one leg each day. Stretching your toes, raising up on your toes, calf raises, that type of thing, just to keep the foot moving. You don't want anything kind of seizing up, tightening up. And we definitely discuss that kind of thing with younger people coming in. Younger people that are coming in are generally coming in because they have pain or an issue already occurring. So we'll give them type of education. But during the gait cycle when we're walking, a lot of that time is spent on one leg. So as the other leg's swinging through, you're balancing on one leg. So if you can't physically stand there balancing on one leg, it means that during your gait cycle, you're going to be pretty out of balance. So we see that in older people that they can't stand on one leg without holding on to something. So to think that they're walking around, give them a little push and that would be over. So it's just about building that strength and balance in older people is really important.
Because I read somewhere that one of the tests of how healthy you are in terms of lifespan relative to health span is being able to stand on one leg.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
For a period of time.
Yeah.
For 30 seconds or whatever it is. I can't remember what it is. And, of course, you know, like my typical thing is I'm going to try it straight away. And I don't know where this stuff's come from, but all of a sudden it's come out of nowhere. Like we're hearing about this sort of stuff all the time, you know, as our stance. Mm. I guess it's probably important in terms of people falling over and not being able to stand like that and falling over and breaking the hip, et cetera, because there's a lot of correlations between broken hips after the age of 35 and death within 12 months from heart attacks usually. Mm. But if I just put that aside though, like where do you think this movement is coming from? Is it coming from health professionals like yourself and others sort of starting to educate us about the importance of things that we never really thought about? Or is it coming from us, the consumer of your services? Is it coming from us becoming far more aware of our mortality?
I would say a bit of both. I mean, with the aging population and having a lot of those balance and people being in hospital for broken hips that could have probably been avoided, I think it's probably coming from both the consumer and health professionals educating in prevention.
Do you think it's like – because, I mean, I tend to listen to a lot of podcasts these days and I tend to listen to more ones about health and they cover – they tend to cover a variety of aspects. And for me it's about – for me, it starts at the feet. I mean, obviously, it goes all the way up into my brain, making sure my brain's healthy. But there's an expert on every topic, and as a consumer of podcast information or knowledge about physicality and also mental health, but more so physicality, I've become extraordinarily conscious of. Which is why I was interested to talk to you. I've become extraordinarily interested in talking about the importance of awareness about. How we actually walk? How do I wear my shoes down?
Mm-hmm.
My runners very rarely wear down because they're built a certain way not to wear down because it's rubber. But I remember when I was a kid at school, I used to always wear my heel down and my school shoes on one side.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the outside, yeah. But I never really thought about it. But I guess that meant I was walking a certain way or scuffing a certain way, which might mean I had not a fault, but there was something in my gait that wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
As a kid, I'm talking about, a 9-year-old kid. My mum was always complaining about having to get my shoes re-heeled.
Yeah. A common thing people do is bring in their shoes for us to check that wear pattern. The correct place for heel strike, so we call it heel strike, as a leg swings through and you strike with your heel, is on the outside edge of the heel, so it's slightly to the outside of the heel. If you're striking right in the middle of your heel, it's not right. So that slight to the outside is actually correct because our foot's slightly externally rotated.
It does externally rotate.
Yep, so you've got a slight lateral, which is the outside of the foot. Heel strike is the correct place. Obviously, there's extremes of that. You don't want it too far over. And if you're really wearing it a lot, you may be dragging your heel or something like that. So, you know, sometimes people come in and you've got this really, you know, diagonal level on the back of the heel where they've scuffed it down. It may be the shoes are too old, or it may be that they have a bit of a, you know, they're they're scuffing their heel as they're coming through, but that's the correct spot that it should be.
And then when it's the other way, and I remember when I was a kid, there was a thing we used to call, say he or she's knock-kneed. We just say we didn't know what help meant. But is that something to do with your feet or something to do with the hips?
It's usually – it can be a combination or specifically in the knee. Sometimes it's related to hypermobility, so there's a lot of movement at all of the joints. But definitely if the foot's rolling in, so the arch is coming down, it does pull the knee in as well. So sometimes we'll look at correcting the foot. And then anything kind of above ankle, our scope of practice is a bit vague, so we'll refer off to a physio as well to look at the joints further up.
Yeah, that's because, I mean, I've got four sons and my eldest boy, he used to – his knees used to knock. And I remember his mum went to a podiatrist and we got him a special pair of shoes like to help him not do that. But really what I think about it, when I think back in hindsight, because he's had so many knee problems, he's had knee reconstructions and all that sort of stuff because he played a lot of footy. I think it's probably because he probably needed to see a podiatrist, needed to say, listen, you need to go and build certain muscles within this kid in order to pull it back up into the right position. And as a dad, I mean, he's in his late 40s, mid-40s now, and I think back, I feel as though it was a failure from my point of view that I didn't recognise something should have been done at the time. I just went in those days, you just went along with whatever the doctor said, whatever your GP said. Generally speaking, you wouldn't go and see a podiatrist.
Yeah.
You'd take him down to the local doctor, the family doctor that we all saw, and they'd look at, oh, yeah, well, you know, maybe you need to get him a special pair of shoes and send him off to a place that made shoes. But you wouldn't see a health professional in a specific area, and now he pays for it. He has had a litany of operations, over time, all of which expensive, pain in the ass, all of which are correcting something, but every time you correct something, you've got to correct something else happens. And all of which actually get him down over a period of time. If we had just attended to looking after him those days by seeing a health professional who specialised in this one particular area, we might have been able to actually get him off with a bit of exercise or special exercises, we might have been able to get him off this bloody merry-go-round. Do you see a lot of that stuff now in your practice?
Yeah, I mean, hindsight's a great thing and you know, would it have eventuated to the way that it is? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But, people will often come in with no foot problems, just local knee issues, that they want our opinion whether orthotics or foot shoe changes are going to help. And sometimes they will. Sometimes I'll advise that, yes, we should put them under. Other times I'll say, look, it's better to go get some strengthening exercises from the physio, knee-specific strengthening exercises. So
your practice, do you deal with – is that the one just before you get Double Bay? There's one at Rose Bay there or is it Rose Bay itself?
No, we're Rose Bay North on Old South Head Road. Old South Head Road. Further up towards Vaucluse.
Okay, near Harris Farm. Around that area there.
Yeah.
And does your practice specialise in adults, kids? What's your –
We see all ages. Our target market and probably majority of clients we see are women between 30 and 60. That's who we've really kind of honed in on. That target market, bring the husbands in, bring the kids in. So we see the women. We do a lot of what I call aesthetic podiatry, so it's a cosmetic stuff, which reasons I can go into a little later. But we do a lot of that, which a lot of practices don't because they kind of – maybe don't like it or they don't see it as being within the scope of practice of podiatry, but there's a huge need for it. So we do that. But also obviously we're trained in all areas of podiatry. So whilst we're doing a medical pedicure, we can say, look, you've got a bunion here. Maybe that needs to be addressed in footwear or some bit of stability or something like that. Then they'll say, my daughter's got some foot problems. Can I bring her in? Sure, bring her in. And we assess the children and adults as well.
So why do you choose women? Was it a commercial decision or a health practitioner's decision? In other words, there's demand for women between 30 and 60 to be looked at, or alternatively, if it's a commercial decision, no, if we get to them, we'll get to their families. I mean, which decision was it, or both?
Look, probably a bit of both. And honestly, I think it initially began happening organically. It's the demographic I enjoy treating. It's a demographic that I'm in and my team is at the moment. So we naturally were attracting that target market. And once I kind of cottoned on to that and started marketing to that, it just worked. I had a previous business in Melbourne when I first graduated that as a new graduate starting from scratch, I was eager, borderline desperate to build my business. And I remember working with a marketing agency and they kind of said, well, let's sit down, what's your target market? And I said, anyone, you know, I'll take anyone. So it was, and it was hard for them to work with that, like of branding and where we start to focus. And whilst I did grow and I got clients, it definitely doesn't have the same feel as what this business does. And I think it was just the fact that I didn't say no to anybody because I was trying to open things up to make it available to anybody. But that doing the opposite, as you're probably aware of really niching into a specific market, just worked and it started to bring in more clients. And
I want to pick up on something you just said. I'm going to go to the break first. We're going to come back from the break. I want to talk to you, Sally, about that point you made. Sort of, you said the word desperate when you kicked off, because you can feel desperate when you first start any business. Doesn't matter what it is, even as a healthcare professional. And therefore, I will see anyone.
I'll take anything.
Yeah, I'll do it, but just come pay the bills. But I want to talk to you about that after the break because. You don't do that now. Perhaps you see someone if they're desperate.
We'll see anybody.
Yeah, but that's not your market.
It's not the market.
And targeting your market and using people to help you market to those that market gap or that market that you choose. I want to talk to you about that. How has that worked for your business? Because that was sort of my question before. Now, did you decide women 30 to 60 because commercial reasons or is it because that's a cohort of people who actually need help for their feet or is that a cohort of people who are conscious that they need help for their feet or is that a cohort of people who have now risen because they know cosmetically they have to look a certain way? And you are in Rose Bay, so, you know, I want to know, does that mean just your area or can you expand that same cohort into other areas? And I want to go to the break because this is about marketing. I mean, at the end of the day, you've got a skill and you provide a skill, but really whether or not you're going to be successful or not is can you market to a certain class of people? How do you choose that class of people? How do you hone in on those individuals? How do you find out? What research did you do to get there? And then what external help do you enlist to help you build awareness around, let's call it your mission? But I want to go to the break and come straight back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So I'm back from the break. I'm here with Sally Belcher from Rose Bay Podiatry. And we went through the process. Yep, she became a podiatrist. And I have a cheeky question I want to ask you a bit later, but, you know, about, you know, can you tell a person from the feet that they wear? For the feet that they possess, tell me about their character. But anyway, we'll come back to that cheeky question a bit later. But we are touching on something really important from a business point of view is how do I work out my target market? Now, podiatry is like every other bloody business. You've got to find out who's your target market. Yours, you said earlier yours is women 30 to 60. By the way, we're talking these suburbs. Maybe you get some people from other areas, but 30 to 60 in these suburbs. Why them? How did you arrive at that cohort?
As I touched on earlier, I think initially it started to happen organically. We're getting people come in that demographic that were coming in for maybe, you know, an ingrown toenail, something that was concerning for them. We would fix the problem and then they would...
But how do they know about you? Like, how do they know where you were?
Oh, they may have, they were just living locally. These were random bookings, not random bookings.
Walk-ins.
They would obviously call. We've got a website, all of that. They're local podiatrists. So they would come in.
They might have found you through Google, that?
Might have found us through Google, but we weren't specifically target marketing or branding towards
Instagram?
That. We're all of that stuff now.
Then?
Probably not back then. Not back then.
So no Instagram back then, no Facebook back then, but you weren't sort of no showing socials. Your wares.
No socials, pretty crappy website.
Yeah.
Definitely phone number was on there, but they would have to call through to book or walk in.
What year were we talking about?
2014, right, 2015.
Okay. That stuff was around, but it wasn't big. Mm. So basically people, it was a referral base.
Yeah.
Someone walking
yeah,
in.
Yeah, or GP referrals.
Yeah, GP referrals. Yeah. Okay, so did you go to GPs?
So that used to be a big part of our marketing was going around, knocking on GPs' doors, trying to meet with them. And they had this, I don't want to be derogatory, but there was this kind of rigmarole you'd go through with sometimes their receptionist would even say, yeah, okay, well, you can come in, meet the GPs and bring in sushi on Thursday. So that would require a lunch and you'd come in and provide lunch and tell the GPs about what you do and where you are and try and build a rapport that way. But it was, yeah, it wasn't the best way. It was normally the local podiatrist they would start referring to. But there was a lot of promotion to other health professionals to try and bring in referrals.
So you went around building a sort of a network.
Yeah.
The usual way of doing things, right from the very beginning. But at some stage you've worked out how do I market using digital marketing? How do I digitally market to this cohort of people?
Yeah, so the digital marketing, I think we started getting into probably more around 2017, 2018.
So what did you go for? What type of person to give you the advice on this stuff? Because that's pretty hard. Who the hell can help me?
I got in a social media marketing person. She was a one-man band but knew her stuff and was really good.
How did you know her stuff?
How did she know her stuff?
How did you know her stuff? What did you see?
Oh, she was a client and so that's how I met her originally and kind of she gave me a little bit of advice and I thought she knows more than I do, so that's how she knows her stuff.
That's because, her best start.
And we just gave it a go and it started to work. In terms of we started to gain followers and people were coming in saying, I saw you on Instagram, I saw you on Facebook. But that demographic of women that I was saying were coming in randomly were seeing us for a problem and then they were going routinely to a nail salon. Or something in between. The problem would arise and I'd come back in. I'd say, you know, what have you been? Who's been cutting your nails? Oh, I've been going down to the nail bar down the road. And I have a big concern with nail bars, just the level of sterility. They're obviously, you know, they're not under the same regulations as health professionals. So there's a lot of infections coming out of them. The nail polishes are shared amongst the rest of Rose Bay or Bondi Junction or wherever. So sharing polishes and things like that is pretty unsanitary and we see a lot of the aftermath of that. But there was this gap in the market that people were coming to us when they had a problem and then going elsewhere for routine care and problems coming back again and they'll kind of, you know, kept just coming back.
That's
only when they had an issue. Podiatry, and I don't know the stereotype you think of when you think of a podiatrist, but podiatry is not very sexy. People kind of think of podiatry and think of somebody 80 plus coming in with bunions and corns and getting those fixed. So there was that around it in terms of what comes to mind. If someone was to say, I'm going to an appointment with a podiatrist, there's sometimes a bit of judgment around that, generally, I feel. And I thought, well, you know, what can we do about that to try and change
that? You need to flip that.
So
how did you?
Well, we came up with a term called a medical pedicure. There's a number of other salons around Australia that are also doing medical pedicures and they kind of started around the same time as well, but it was very unique for our area. And it was medical obviously being a health professional pedicure in it's a foot treatment. And on our booking page on our website, you can now do online booking so people don't even have to talk to someone. They just go on and click it. You've got a standard podiatry appointment and then underneath it is a medical pedicure. Very similar treatments provided in both because podiatrists have always been able to do this scope of practice of skin and nail care. And the medical pedicure have kind of, you know, shaped it over time to become a more aesthetic treatment. But at the beginning, it was literally the same treatment as our standard podiatry skin and nail treatment, but we called it a medical pedicure. And then,
as in medical grade?
Medical grade, sterilised, qualified health professional giving you a skin and nail treatment. And the amount of people that would go for the medical pedicure but wouldn't come for a standard podiatry appointment. They felt comfortable coming for a medical pedicure but not for a podiatry treatment purely just because of the marketing terms that we used.
So just take me through. So they were happy to come and get a medical grade...
Medical pedicure.
Pedicure. That is... from the nails and
do take off hard skin, callus, corns, all of that.
But they weren't happy to get a podiatry appointment either.
Wasn't that they weren't happy to, but they weren't inclined, or if they would see the podiatrist and think, you know, I haven't got anything wrong with me. I just want the pedicure, but a professional one. So they would book that, but something psychological, they wouldn't necessarily be our – I don't think they would have come in as a client otherwise. They would have probably gone to the nail salon.
But did you end up getting them as a podiatry client after that?
Well, they continue to do medical pedicures. So they come to the podiatry clinic, but they call it a medical pedicure. And
just a change of terminology.
Yeah, of course. And then they'll go and tell their girlfriends, they do medical pedicures, which is now called Medi-Pedis. And it's a bit of a it's a thing now in the eastern suburbs. People come in for Medi-Pedis.
Is it more expensive?
Same. So now that we've shaped it a little, so if people come in for a standard podiatry appointment, it's a 20-minute appointment. We do a skin and nail treatment. We take out ingrown toenails, anything like that. A medical pedicure, is a half hour, so it's a bit longer, a bit more aesthetic. We make sure the nails are shaped really nicely, filed straight. I've actually launched a product range as well, specifically for podiatrists wanting to do medical pedicures. So we put a nail serum on and a nice cream and give them a massage and all of that. So it leaves you with a nice feel as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So podiatrists becoming sexy, which is pretty cool. Like, you know, like,
well,
what I like about it is you change in terms of changing the name to medical pedicure.
Mm.
Was that a collaboration with the lady who you were using for your digital social media, or how did you come to term?
I think it was just breaking it down and to try and make it less podiatry related, less medical. People know what a pedicure is. People go to the salon for a pedicure. To differentiate it from a pedicure at the nail bar, we needed to bring in the podiatry healthcare aspect of it, and people associate medical with health. So it was just medical pedicure worked well.
But how'd you obviously sat around a room of other people, or did you wake up in the middle of the night thinking
this word? I remember saying to the team, I'm going to start a new service and call it this and just see if it works. But it was mainly because of that group of people that were coming in only when there was an issue. So I was like, we need to provide a service that's going to prevent them from continually going back to nail salons when they don't need to, because they felt like they could only come in when they had a problem.
Could you explain? Like, I mean, I've never been to a nail salon, but they're everywhere.
Since studying podiatry, I couldn't pardon the pun, step foot in there either.
Where did this come from? Like, how did this become a thing? I do remember when I used to work in Hong Kong, a long time ago, like nearly 40 years ago, there were in the hotels, there was always a place where you could go downstairs, and there was a steam sauna, and there was a dude down there, a guy down there. It was always a guy, and there was a men's section and a girl's section. They were separate, but the men's section was a guy, and then he had a little knife thing, like a little blade, and he would cut all the skin off your feet, and it was amazing. Like there'd be a pile of skin. Mm. I mean, it sounds pretty disgusting, but
no, that's the day of my life.
There'd be a pile of skin from the dude before and me. And
you want to clean that up?
No, they clean up. But I mean, you see it, like, and you think, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, it's but I used to feel unreal. Like, I used to love
it. It's a good feeling. It's very fresh, very clean.
So good. It was one of the highlights of me having to travel to Hong Kong to work, and I used to go there once a month. And it was just the hotel, just going downstairs. But I never knew about this in Australia. I remember we used to come back to Australia, and it just didn't exist as far as I was aware. But all of a sudden, now you're saying these things to me. In my own mind, I'm starting to think of all the places I've seen with these pedicure places and manicure places. Mm. What is it? How did that proliferate? I mean, where did that come from?
I don't know. I've seen it as well, and I don't know whether it's just eastern suburbs or if it's happening.
No, it's everywhere.
Everywhere.
I've seen it over the North Shore.
But, yeah, you'd have three or four on the one street. So
therefore there must be big demand for it.
There's big demand for it. The issue is that it's not really sanitary. And their level of qualification. I mean, generally, there's not really strict regulations around it, but they shouldn't be using any type of blade that's going to draw blood, because obviously if it's not fully sterilised, you don't want any bloodborne stuff going on.
Maybe you can explain the sterilisation process, because how you sterilise it uses, you use either ultraviolet or something, you use some special processes to sterilize and machinery to do
it. Yeah, podiatry and most health services, you know, dental, everything's the same, that they get monitored fairly stringently that you're sterilizing properly. So our process is instruments, once they've been used, get manually washed in a detergent or ultrasonic cleaner. Then they get put in a bag and into a steam sterilizer. So the steam sterilizer has to reach 145 degrees from the top of my head and hold it at 145 degrees under pressure for 8 minutes, thereabouts. I don't know the specifics, but our machine does a good job of it. And then they get dried. So they're in packets that are permeable to the steam. They get dried. The sterilizer prints out or gives you an electronic number on it. That number then gets put on the kit. And they get put in a drawer ready for us to use. Once I've seen the patient, we have to keep notes of every treatment that we've provided. That kit number gets put on the patient's file as well. So everything's trackable back to the load that it was sterilized.
It's an autoclave, basically.
It's an autoclave. It's a medical autoclave. So they get calibrated and checked, you know, 12 monthly. We have to get someone come out and check it's working properly.
So you guys are regulated under some sort of legal system.
Yeah.
So, and do you get audited? So someone comes out and looks at your stuff, whenever they feel like it?
Whenever they feel like they'll just show up.
Random. Yep.
Yeah, and it's not just the instruments, because I think there's a bit of awareness now around sterilizing instruments, and people will go into a salon and they'll either have their own kit or they'll have some level of sterilization. It's likely not that level because the time put into doing that, it takes a huge chunk of our day. I have an employee that's part of their job, as they do that. And the expense for a nail salon where they're doing cheap as chips, manicures, pedicures, they're just not going to put that into their sterilizing. Apart from the instruments, everything needs to be kind of sanitized afterwards. As you said, the pile of skin under it all needs to be cleaned before the next client comes in. New, disposable mats put underneath. Anything that touches a foot needs to be thrown in the bin. There's nothing that's reused often in nail salons, and I haven't come on here to slander nail salons, but things that we commonly see is the spaces that go between the toe. They put these foam spaces. They're not disposable. They might wipe them down, but they use them on the next person, and people can end up getting infections between their toes and things like that. They'll use buffers and things so they'll sterilize the instruments, but then they'll fall short because they're not trained in infection control. So they think, oh, well, I'll use a buffer because it's just on the surface, so it doesn't really matter. Give it a wipe down, it'll be fine. But it's not a clean way.
Also, you can't dispose
because
it's too expensive. Like you can't.
Well, that's right. There's limitations because people will only pay a certain amount when they go there. They expect a certain price point. Because, you know, it's not a health professional that they're going to. So they expect a lower price point, but they have to cut corners somewhere.
So you recognise a gap then in the
market. I recognise a gap in the market, yeah.
And now, obviously now you're capitalising on that gap. In terms of capitalising on the gap, how hard do you go on marketing? So, I mean, what do you allocate towards this? And because really, at the end of the day, you're a podiatrist. Mm. You get that part. But really, but at the front end, you're a marketer about health, hygiene, perhaps price point, convenience. What are the themes you're marketing?
Yeah, it's a little challenging being a health professional and seeing it from that business perspective. And it's something that I often deal with because I think as a health professional, most of us are empathic. You know, we care about the patient, and then it can be frowned on a little bit to be really, you know, making money out of that and marketing it. And, you know, there's kind of a fine line and sometimes it can be difficult because you're kind of going, yeah, I am making a business out of this, but it's something people need and it's solving people from going somewhere that they're getting infections from. So how hard do I go with the marketing? So I suppose over time it's built gradually. COVID was a very interesting time for us because nail salons closed. So we had already initiated the medical pedicure. As health professionals in New South Wales, we were able to stay open. Medical pedicures is definitely not the only service we offer. We do orthotic assessments and things we were talking about earlier. We do see all of that, but medical pedicures has become quite a popular service. So people gradually started to cotton on to, I can't go and get my hair cut, I can't go to the nail salon again, but hang on a second, this podiatrist down the road does medical pedicures. So it was all of a sudden we couldn't keep up with demand over COVID with medical pedicures because people were wanting to come in. They usually go to all these nail salons when there's like four on every street. They were all closed, so they were all filtering through Rosebay Podiatry. At one stage I ended up, there was a beauty clinic across the road that was in lockdown and I just couldn't keep up with demand, so I ended up calling her and saying, look, can I use your rooms, tidy them up, take all our equipment over there? And we were seeing people in those rooms and then sending them across the road to pay. And it was a lot, along with the stress of COVID and keeping everyone safe and all the rat tests and all of that. It was intense. But we had a huge growth period over COVID because people realized what we were offering. And a lot of those patients that were coming in that were going to the nail salons were like, this is really where I should have been going to begin with because of the level of quality in the service rather than the salon.
So do you think that your re-education of these particular consumers or customers was more in the them participating in the event than it was trying to re-educate them through social media? Or did you still try to re-educate them through social media?
Re-educate them through social media for sure. Once they're in the door, then it's a lot easier because we just explain what we do and how we do it,
and then they see it and they go,
"Oh, yeah, this is where I should be." But yeah, social media. We use the social media person that I still use now. She's got a team as well that she structures the posts for a number of weeks in advance, which is a combination of call to actions, marketing, education. So we use and then just amusing posts as well that are related to our target market. But they're fairly well thought out. I obviously have to have a part in the educational posts in writing the content for them. But yeah, it's there's a lot of education surrounding the medical pedicures and the risks involved in other services.
So yeah, I'm I'm a big believer in Instagram. But only if it's there for either information, entertainment. Well, only the only times it works: information, entertainment, or education. Where's most of the weight in your business allocated to? I mean, is it more allocated to education, or is there any entertainment in there? Do you ever put funny stuff in there?
Yeah. Which often. She knows my target market well, so she'll find stuff that she thinks is amusing. I approve it all. I think I'm quite an intense client. Poor thing. I'm often going, "Don't put that up. To change this, change that." So I give her a bit of a hard time. But yeah, so she comes up with a lot of that she thinks this will be suitable for engagement with your target market. And then I would say that's maybe a quarter of the posts. Maybe half is educational, and the other quarter would probably be call to action.
And what's working best, stories or posts on the grid?
Reels
work
well, and stories at the moment I think get more interaction.
Yeah, so you have to, like, in terms of carousel on the reels, are you putting up carousels or are you putting up just little conversations?
No, she's trying to push me more. I don't love being in front of the camera, but the videos of me, particularly in front of the camera, speaking or educating, are doing really well.
Yeah, so therefore you have to do it.
Therefore, you have to do it. And I, you know, I have a pet hate of seeing any businesses, but particularly health professionals, using stock photos and stock images. It's just cheesy, and you kind of see straight through it. When someone sees some personality and they engage with the business, it just works so much better.
And in terms of education, you don't have to come home on the or slam, you know, let's call them your competitors or some of the people who your customers go to. You don't have to slam, but is it a process of you just saying what you do better? As opposed to saying what someone else does.
We don't put people down. It's more just educating about what we do. But it can be, I mean, I've got a post on how to lace your shoes up if you're a runner and you're getting toe pain. So it's shoelacing, stretching techniques, taping. I do a demonstration of how to tape your foot if you've got some heel pain. So there's a variety of different things.
That's cool.
The education posts are, you know, how we sterilize is one on that and why we sterilize and it's a whole variety of different educational type things, not just around medical pedicures.
So before I wrap, I want to ask you a question. A question I've always wanted to ask someone like you. Do you reckon you can have a look at someone's feet and then sort of make a call on their character? Can you sort of, you know, put them into a position? Like into a silo?
Maybe shoes. Choice.
By the shoes they wear?
I think there's a lot of judgment on shoes, and I hate to pigeonhole people, but, yeah, there's. I think sometimes you can tell people by their shoes. Their foot, no. Obviously levels of self-care and things you can, but in terms of high arch flat foot, could be anyone. But, I mean, general demographics of people will have Asians usually have a smaller, narrower foot. Islanders will have a big flat foot, but generally characteristics, no. Shoes, I don't know. There's if someone's coming in a dress shoe, certain judgment. If someone's coming in wearing Crocs, there's certainly a different judgment of people who wear Crocs.
Well, there was a very well-known book, I can't remember the name of the author, but I remember the name of the book, that was written maybe 20 years ago. And this girl used to be partners with Simon Reynolds, who was the advertising guy.
Mm.
I don't know what has ever happened to Simon Reynolds, but I remember she appeared on NBC in the US because she was living in the US, Australian. And the book was called "You Can Tell a Person by the Shoes Tell a Man by the Shoes He Wears."
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And so you would agree with
that? I would agree with
that. She actually wrote a book on it. Yeah. Because a lot of guys got a bit freaked out by that. And I remember I bought the book and I was actually very interested in what she was sort of trying to get at. I actually fell in one of the categories, which I wasn't happy about. So I decided to change my shoes I wore. For example, I'm a big I love R.M. Williams because I have a farm and I find them comfortable, easy to get on. I can wear them with just about anything. But generally speaking, I like runners. I like to wear runners everywhere, but good runners, quality runners. But also they have to be comfortable. Sometimes I get myself, I don't want to become sort of like the dad or the granddad who just wears comfortable shoes. You know, that's a bit of a shitty look from my point of view, egotistically I'm doing it.
Yeah, look, I think these days it's hard because particularly in COVID, a lot of corporate workplaces became a lot more casual too. Yeah, so runners are definitely, you know, so many people wear runners. And it's you know, you can't be too quick to judge. Sometimes you get someone in and they look like a real slob and then you get talking to them and then, you know, multimillionaire or something, you kind of go, yeah, you can't pigeonhole people. But, yeah, on a funny topic, you know, someone wore Crocs in, I would be making a judgment about them.
I'll bet you and your podiatrist mates and the rest of the people who work in your organisation, you're probably sitting there, oh, my God, did you see those shoes that that dude wore? And it's no wonder. I always
knew
there's
no judgment going in at Rose Bay Podiatry.
Well, I want to thank you very much. I mean, I've had it's just sort of I know it's a serious business, so I know what you do as a serious business and I know what you have as a serious undertaking in relation to expanding your business. But I also want to say thank you for the bit of levity because it's unusual for me to talk to a health professional in relation to feet in particular. You're the first person I've ever spoken to about this, on air that is. But there is some levity associated with it and it is actually sort of quite lighthearted but at the same time very, very serious topic. And so I really appreciate it. And you've told me some things. I've never really spoken at length to a podiatrist. I've met podiatrists, but I've never spoken at length to one. And I want to thank you for your honesty in terms of how you go about running your business. But I appreciate it. It's been pretty cool, a lot of fun. And I live in the area, so I better get my ass down to your joint. I'm going
to
make sure I got my best shoes on
before
I get
there.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.